The web page you see before you is divided up into 5 sections. In this first lecture, we will cover the first and a part of the second sections. First, definitions of virtue and vice. These come primarily from the Greek philosophical tradition. The word for virtue, arete, which is approximately the equivalent of the Latin term virtus, originally came from the gymnastic, or one might say the area of physical education and sports on the one hand, and military prowess on the other, although it extended to some extent into the notion of art and of accomplishing technical tasks. Arete simply means excellence, goodness. It's doing the very best that one can, being the best athlete, being the most brave, and showing the greatest physical prowess in battle from the military perspective, and being the best kind of artist, showing the best kind of artistry that one can. This is the remote background to the word, which was then taken into the philosophical, and in particular the moral tradition, to describe moral goodness, being the best kind of person you possibly can. And that's the sense in which the term virtue is most traditionally used. That term comes into the Christian theological and mystical tradition and is used a great deal in the monastic tradition. However, we need to note, as we will in just a moment, that it's not used technically in that way in the New Testament. The word kakia, which means vice, the Latin term for it is vitium, refers to effectively the opposite of virtue, the opposite of arete. Whereas arete is excellence, and especially moral excellence or goodness, kakia is badness, it's defect. If arete or virtue is being the best one possibly can, then kakia is to be twisted into a kind of parody of what one could be, devoluted or involuted into the opposite of what one should be, an ability or a skill or a possibility which is not only not utilized but converted into something like its opposite. It represents in the fields of military endeavor or even in the area of athletics, complete incapacity or defective ability, cowardice or sloth, and it's taken up into the philosophical tradition to mean moral badness or wickedness. Now, if you drop down just a bit to the last paragraph in this first section, this is from Kittel's Theological Dictionary of the New Testament, and it's meant to emphasize that the terms arete and kakia, virtue and vice, are not used in their technical philosophical sense in the scriptures. Although there are some references in the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, that do represent a significant influence from classical Greek. In general, although there are virtue and vice lists in both the Old Testament, even in the Sermon on the Mount, and certainly in St. Paul's letters, the word, the technical term arete, is not used in its specifically moral philosophical sense, perhaps because of the New Testament emphasis on grace. The term virtue or arete in the philosophical sense relies heavily on the individual's ability to practice themselves, to put into practice and to repeat these morally good acts so that they become firmly embedded within the character and become part of the habitual behavior. In fact, one of the definitions in the philosophical tradition of a virtue is that it is a habit. It is good practice raised to the level of becoming habitual. In the New Testament, there's a stronger emphasis, as we know, on the grace of God, the absolute necessity of grace to accomplish anything good. And indeed, in the context of especially the Old Testament, kakia, or wickedness, tends to have the specific meaning of that which is opposed to the law. So kakia, vice, becomes identical with, or almost the same as, sinfulness, doing that which is contrary to the will and to the law of God. And in the New Testament, the term vice or kakia is used in much that way. It refers not so much strictly to the philosophical understanding, which we'll be looking at in more detail in just a moment, but more specifically in the scriptures to acting against the law of God, acting against God's will. In other words, vice is sinfulness, arete or virtue is cooperation with the grace of God so as to be able to live out the likeness to Christ. Now, moving back again into the more classical philosophical tradition, section 2 provides Plato's tripartite, that is to say, three-part, divided into threes, understanding of the human soul. Plato says in both the Republic and in the Phaedrus, and some of the most important texts on this subject are given below the diagram, below the picture, Plato suggests that we can understand the human soul as threefold or tripartite, imagining the metaphor of a charioteer with two winged horses, two very powerful horses. The charioteer, the one responsible for guiding and controlling, is the nous, the deepest level of human personality. As we've seen in the later mystical tradition, this is the level of the self capable of contemplation. For Plato, it is both that, the part of the self that contemplates, but it's also what in the Latin tradition is more specifically referred to as ratio, the reasoning part of the self, capable of making reasonable decisions. It's also referred to in the philosophical literature on occasion as the logistikon, the dwelling place of the logos, or meaning-perceiving part of the self, or the hegemonikon, the ruling or guiding part. You might be interested to know that in the later Greek monastic tradition, the word for abbot or the administrator of a monastery is the hegumenos. So we might refer to reason or the nous or the logistikon as the abatial function of the human soul, coordinating and making final decisions about all that affects the rest of the self. That's the guiding or ruling part. But the two winged horses, these two powerful steeds, these two necessary energies which one has living in creation are, on the one hand, desire or longing, epithumia, and this part of the self is referred to in Plato's writing as the epithumetikon, and the term is also used by Christian theologians and Christian mystics. In the Latin, it tends to be described by the term concupiscentia, or the concupiscible faculty. And the other great capacity of the soul is thumos, which is usually translated in the literature as spirit or passion. But unfortunately, these words don't convey the almost military sense of going into battle. This is the strong, virtuous part of the self that shows valor and courage, that is willing to undertake difficult tasks, even energized by things that are difficult. It's the part of the self that's eager to right wrongs, to step in when some sort of damaging force is taking place and to try to oppose it. And I think the term strength probably more adequately describes it, although that's not, as I said, the classical definition. Plato defines four cardinal virtues that correspond to each of these three parts of the self and one that refers to the whole self. Justice, dikaiosune, he says in the beginning of the Republic, corresponds to the whole of the self. The virtue of reason is prudence, phronesis, sometimes translated as wisdom, but I'd like to reserve that word for a translation of the term Sophia, which has a specific technical meaning, as we'll see when we look at the Christians who apply this tradition. The virtue of the desiring, epithumetikon, is temperance, the capacity to say no or balance desire, either for that which is beautiful or that which is necessary to keep the body alive in the case of food and drink, or that which we want to possess in the case of our ability to amass wealth. So each of these parts of the self has a corresponding virtue, and there is justice which corresponds to the whole of the soul. Now we need to note in concluding this first section that Plato describes the difficulty of the soul, the difficulty of the charioteer, and you can read this in the text that I've provided, as consisting in the fact that desire is unruly. The epithumia, longing energy of the self, is the one that's going to get us into most trouble. So his solution is that the ruling faculty, the logistikon or the hegemonikon, must enter into a kind of a compact, a kind of an alliance with this warrior-like, strong thumikon, capable of resisting that which is difficult, and the two of them can control, as it were, overpower desire. One might note that this is perhaps a particularly male rendition of the problems of the human soul. Plato's pupil Aristotle was the tutor to Alexander the Great, who went on to conquer the known world. And one might say that this model of the self probably needs to be reevaluated and reassessed in order to understand the real good, positive value of epithumia or desire. And that indeed we find in Christian theologians, and in particular we'll look at Gregory of Nyssa, beginning with the second lecture on this material.